वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासां ततो जायामुदीरहे नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवतिरुत्तमा श्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्टिकी कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंदगोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः। श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 27 टेक्स्ट नंबर 10। नमस् तुभ्यं भगवते पुरुषाय महात्मने वासुदेवाय कृष्णाय सात्वतं पतये नमः। नमस्तुभ्यं भगवते पुरुषाय महात्मने वासुदेवाय कृष्णाय सात्वतं पतये नमः। नमस्तुभ्यं भगवते पुरुषाय महात्मने वासुदेवाय कृष्णाय सात्वतं पतये नमः। नमस्तुभ्यं भगवते पुरुषया महात्मने वासुदेवाय कृष्णाय सात्वतं पतये नमः। Mataji's. Shaya Mahatmane Vasudevaya Krishnaya Satyatam Patele namaha, obeisances, tubhyam, unto you, bhagavate, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, purushaya, the Lord dwelling within the hearts of all, mahaatmane, the great soul, vasudevaya, to him who dwells everywhere, krishnaya, Shri Krishna, Sattvatam, of the Yadu dynasty, Pataye, to the master, namaha, obeisances. Translation: obeisances unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the great soul, who are all pervading and who reside in the hearts of all. My obeisances unto you, Krishna, the chief of the Yadu dynasty. Text 11. Translation: unto him who assumes transcendental bodies according to the desire of his devotees, unto him whose form is itself pure consciousness, unto him who is everything, who is the seed of everything, and who is the soul of all creatures, I offer my obeisances. Purport: we could hardly conjure from the first line of this verse that God is somehow impersonal but assumes a personal material body. It is clearly said here that the Lord assumes different forms according to swachanda, according to his own desire or according to desire of his devotees. An impersonal God could hardly reciprocate with the personal desire of its devotees, nor could an impersonal God itself have desires, since desire is characteristic of personality. Therefore, the Lord's manifesting different forms in a personal way, responding to personal desires, indicates that he is eternally a person and manifests his different transcendental bodies as an expression of his own eternal nature. The word Visuddha Jnana Murtaye is most significant. Murti means the form of the deity, and it specifically states here the Lord's form is itself completely pure consciousness. Consciousness is the primary spiritual element, distinct from any of the material elements, and even distinct from the subtle or psychological material elements, mundane mind, intelligence and false ego, which are simply a psychic covering over pure consciousness. Since the Lord's form is made of pure consciousness, it can hardly be understood as a material body like the mortal bags of flesh and bones we carry around in this world. In the last two lines of this verse, there is a poetic emphasis on the word sarva, everything. The Lord is everything. He is the seed of everything and he is the soul of every creature. Therefore, let us join with Indra in offering our obeisances to the Lord. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namine Gauratvishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate
गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांता नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवास आदि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
Hare Krishna. So it's indeed a great privilege to have the opportunity to read this beautiful chapters of the Srimad Bhagavatam, especially the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. By Krishna's mercy and Prabhupada's mercy, we have survived the long journey through the pages of the Bhagavatam, and we have reached this beautiful forest of grace, as we call it, in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, which is nothing but forest of grace, the darshan into the forest of grace, forest of mercy, forest of pure divinity. And in this 10th canto, one of the most astounding and most beautiful chapters is obviously the Govardhan Leela. And through this Govardhan pastime, so many amazing gifts have been given to the world. Of course, we have our own deity here, Gopalji, lifting the Giriraj Parvat. It's because of this beautiful pastime that we have this beautiful form of the Lord. And so many very interesting and amazing places on the parikrama of Govardhan are outcome of this pastime of smashing the pride of Indra and Surbhi and Indra approaching to the Lord, offering prayers. The places like Govinda Kund, Surabhi Kund, Airavat Kund, Naval Afsara Kund, and all these astounding beautiful places which are still visible to these mortal eyes. Many of the places are looped, are lost to the eyes, but they are still visible to us. Indeed, when we go there, we can take complete shelter of these places, because these places are filled with this powerful vibrations. So how much wonderful it is for all of us to really have these places, especially places like Govinda Kund. Just sitting there, you can imagine this beautiful pastime has happened there. Surabhi Kund, the place, this particular verse, this particular episode, right, happened there. So it is indeed a very, very wonderful pastime that has been happening. And while we are reading the Bhagavatam, and while we have been reading verse by verse progression of this pastime, we are in this very, very important situation where Indra, Devendra, for the last few verses, is offering his prayers to Krishna. Many times, because of the obvious shallowness of devotion that we may be having in our hearts, very shallow, it becomes very, very natural, or rather it becomes very, very like a habit to imitate the great souls. Because as we also say that if you can't make it, fake it. So, you know, we extend this a bit too long, and we keep on faking it. And the result is we never make it. So similarly, in our observation, we have seen that the Brijabasis, the most elevated devotees of the Lord, even the current Brijbasis who are staying in Vrindavan. They have a typical way of addressing Indra. Indra, because he did something to Krishna, he did something to Brijbasis, and they very much address him as a very ordinary person. Okay, oh Indra ko kya hai abhi hota hai. Or oh Indra, you know, is like in one of those ordinary guys in one of the corners. That's the way they talk. And we have no right to judge how they can talk the way they talk. But do we have the etiquette? Do we have the qualification? Do we have the... kya hamari aukaad hai? Do we have the capacity to talk about Indra in any way other than out of utmost respect? But we do so sometimes. We just, oh, that Indra. You know, when it starts raining, hey Indra, stop the rain. Who are we to do that? Many times we just say, hey Indra, hey, kya Indra, don't trouble us. I mean, so I was trying to just understand, who is Indra? And once you understand who is Indra, keeping Indra as a reference point, you can easily understand who is Krishna. To the extent we do not understand the glory of Indra, to that extent, whether we like it or not, whether we accept it or not, whether we know it or not, we may not be able to appreciate the glory of Krishna. And we may be taking Krishna very casually, as the Brijbasis take Krishna as very casually. Oh, jhuta kahega. That debauchee. Yeah, but Radharani can speak that. And of course it is part of our Shikshastakam. But can we see Krishna as like that? For us it is Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachitananda Vigraha Anadira Adira Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. That's the way our original Acharya, Lord Brahma, addressed Krishna. In none of the Brahma Samhita you see Krishna is a liar. Krishna is a debauchee. Krishna is, he doesn't keep his words. There's beautiful glorification of the glory of Krishna. So while we are in this portion, for some time we must understand what is the glory of Krishna. And what is the glory of Indra? And we may not be able to understand the glory of Indra just as much as a frog understands the extent of the ocean. When I first became a devotee, the first book I was given is The Laws, what is that? The Scientific Basis of Krishna Consciousness. E is equal to MC square by the BI. The first book, because all the people who preached to me were from the BI, my brother, including my brother. So then I opened the first page, I distinctly remember. I opened the first page and I saw this painting or drawing of a frog. And then there is this comic character. How big is the ocean? And then he's saying, this big? Then next photo, this big? Next photo, this big? So it gave me a very graphic understanding. What a brilliant painting is that. You know, if you go deep, if you go real deep, this example of frog is so very applicable to us. In every aspects of spirituality that we are trying to understand. How great is Krishna? Is he this great? This great? This great? Because we will always understand the glory of something based on our yardsticks, based on our measuring instruments. We may never understand something beyond this or this. Right? So as this frog mentality that we may have, we may never understand the glory of Indra. What to talk of Krishna? I was just thinking, Indra, we talk about education. We talk about people who are highly educated, and practically the educated people are actually controlling the world. Prabhupada, you know how much emphasis he was to preach to the scientist community. He had the whole BI set up so that he could preach to the scientist community, because this intelligentsia of the world are practically controlling the world. Talk about education in the top universities, you know, people, what sort of salaries they are paid. But to be the direct disciple of Brihaspati, I mean, that's really a great education. And Indra was a direct disciple of Brihaspati,
So much so has Bhishma Dev or other people. Now to be a disciple and have the qualification to learn under Brihaspati, it's a very, very great honor. A great position indeed. We talk about beauty. If some man is beautiful, some woman will fall on, would be wanting to spend time with him and everything. In some marriage that I heard recently, you just call one of this Bollywood actresses to come in the marriage and perform. Just performing for 15 minutes, they charge you a crore rupees. They're close to $250,000. Just to perform. And because they apparently are looking very beautiful, and they have these features, they have their charms, they have their figures, and that's why they get paid this sort of amounts. But can you imagine the beauty of Indra and the power of Indra, that all the apsaras who are millions of times more beautiful than any of the most beautiful Miss Universes that we would have in this world, in the past or in the future. These apsaras are servants of Indra. Indra is maintaining them. Can you imagine how powerful and how, they dance for him free of cost. It's not that Indra has to give up a check every now and then for their dance. That's how beautiful Indra is. Charming personality. Opulence. we talk about opulence. How can we, we have been talking about buying houses, so at the most my mind can stretch to 2 BHK, 3 BHK or a 4 bedroom house, kitchen. And that's, somebody buying a house is great. So our yastik is having a big house. But what is the opulence of Indra? The whole heavenly planet is his home. And the opulence that we have heard about. Wealth and strength. We know all these things. How famous is Indra? Just recently, an ordinary, a cricketer who resigned from the much awaited resignation from his cricket playing career. When he was playing his last match, this person had 3.5 million people hooked onto the television to see him resign. Many of them were resigning to make sure that he does resign. And many of them were seeing out of... But he is famous. But this is an ordinary person having some opulence of some act of, as we say, hitting a ball with a stick. But what is the opulence of Indra and what is the fame of Indra? Amazing. So while we are just understanding the whole pastime, let us imagine this great opulent personality. And even Shukdev Goswami writes that Indra is offering obeisances with his helmet. He's putting it down. The helmet is as brilliant like the sun. Okay. Many times we just read it. And most of the time, at least I feel this is, all of this is simply a big exaggeration. And that's why we don't get impressed by it. Because if you think it is exaggeration, how will you get impressed by something like that? But this is not exaggeration. It is a fact. When Sukadeva Goswami is saying that Indra's crown was as brilliant as a sun, can we all understand what must be the opulence of Indra? And now imagine the situation. I was hearing the lecture of Bhurijan Prabhu. And he was taking us on a mental tour. Or what is exactly happening? Let us imagine this beautiful, towering personality of Indra with a beautiful, effulgent crown, effulgent vakshasthal, effulgent, what is it called? Chest. Not chest, armor. And effulgent clothes. And everything. He's coming down. On one side is all effulgent, powerful, great. And here is a simple coward boy in a simple environment, surrounded by simple looking people in a simple way. He's just standing in a simple way. See the paradox. It is not easy for Indra to do what he is doing. So while we just say, oh Indra, and he had to surrender, he had to smash, Krishna smashed his pride. That is good, yeah, he did smash his pride. But that's from Krishna's perspective that I smashed Indra's pride. But as far as we are concerned, at least the way I see things, it is simply an amazing act, a glorious act of Indra to be on his position of Indra and take such a humble position as this to be read in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, a person of this caliber putting his crown down and offering obeisances to an ordinary coward boy. Please see it as from the humanistic point of view and don't see it from a divinity point of view. Divinity, yes, it is fine. Krishna is divine. He is great. But see from a humanistic point, a great demigod offering respects to an ordinary boy, of course he realized he is not ordinary, but to be for rest of eternity being seen as completely subservient, and see the amount of opulence, see the amount of charisma that this personality has, Indra. So when we read this, when we read this Indra offering obeisance to Krishna, it definitely shows the glory of Krishna, but it equally shows the glory of Indra for what he is doing. I was just trying to understand how difficult, just think in your own hearts, how difficult and how much of a tapasya it is to seek apology from anybody. It is, just think, you have done you hurt somebody and you realize that you hurt. Is it easy? Is it easy to ask for apologies? It is the most difficult thing to do in life. And to the extent we have this big, big ego, born out of big, big position, to that extent it is that much difficult. But see the glory of this Indra. It is said, to err is human, to forgive is divine, right? To err is human. So it is simply human to err. And in this case it is to err is demigod. I mean, demigods do errors. They are not human beings, but they are demigods. To err is demigods, but to forgive is Krishna. Is divinity. Is divine. So even Indra does mistakes, and all of us will do mistakes, because to err is human. To err is, even demigods do mistakes. But what is glorious, what really separates, what we call dudh ka dudh, pani ka pani, what separates the genuine guys from the insincere people is what do they do after they realize that they have done a mistake. That's most important. Because to do mistake, as the saying says, and as we all have experienced, to err is human. Everybody does errors, everybody does mistakes. But what we do after we have done the mistake is very, very important. Do we justify our mistakes? Do we try to cover it up? Is it too much difficult to ask for apologies? To that extent, we have a bit fat ego. But just see the case of Indra. He has done a big, blatant mistake. No doubt about that. For 7 days, he did something very, very seriously wrong. But as soon as he realized his mistake, he has the utmost humility to approach an ordinary cow and say, please mother cow, come with me, I can't go alone. And he has the humility to approach Krishna in a most humble way, and he's offering these beautiful prayers to Krishna. And in the next few minutes, we'll be discussing to some extent about this important aspect of seeking apology. But before that, there is another interesting point that has been made by Indra, and which again shows the great personality of Krishna. One of the aspects that happens in Bhagavatam is that, we are drawing Krishna's personality, or we are understanding Krishna's personality by each and every verse. Like somebody says, there's somebody who is a painter, and you say that, you paint somebody with lotus eyes, and then he starts painting with those who are expert. You have not seen the person. That's by description. And you start painting. And somebody with this type of lips. Somebody with this type of hair. And then he starts painting. And then while the description is going on, in due course, he makes a beautiful painting of that person. Right? So what are we doing? By the end of the Bhagavatam, what we should be having ready in our hearts is a beautiful chitra or painting of Krishna's personality. What is this person? It's such a deep personality that Krishna is. And Sukadeva Goswami, through these wonderful devotees, he's painting various aspects of Krishna's personality. And he's saying here, Swachandarpita Dehaya Vishuddha Jnana Murtiye Murtaye. He said that unto him who assumes transcendental bodies according to the desires of his devotees. Very interesting point. That Krishna, one of his personality, that he goes out of his way to fulfill the desires of his devotees. Now, he said, oh, so what? Krishna goes out of his way, fine, but let us see, is it easy to go out of the way to fulfill somebody? Because we all are just so busy fulfilling our own desires, isn't it? But Krishna, see his life. He's simply wanting to fulfill the desires of his devotees. And this is very, very evident from the Mahaprakash Leela. Krishna wanted that devotees appreciate him 100%. Not 95%, not 98%. They appreciate him 100%. And he expects devotees to work hard for that. And at the same time, Krishna also works hard to help devotees appreciate him 100%. And how is it? When Murari Gupta came in front of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he immediately took the form of Ram. Because he knew it. That for Murari Gupta to really appreciate me and really appreciate this whole environment of the Shatprahari Leela, is it right? The Mahaprakash Leela. For him to really appreciate it, I cannot be Chaitanya, I cannot be Krishna. I can be, and he will love me. But when I am Ram, his heart will be drawn for me. And then he will see himself as Hanuman. So Krishna took the form of Ram. Chaitanya took the form of Ram. And he said, Murari, you are Hanuman. And see, you have a tail. And he had a tail. And then we have this beautiful painting here. This painting of Sukalambar Brahmachari, right? Or Kolavai Sridhar. Kolavai Sridhar. Kolavai Sridhar was constantly meditating upon the pastimes of Krishna Balaram. And then to Sukalambar Brahmachari, he showed the form of Radha Krishna. So like that. Nursing pastimes. So Krishna incarnates in a different forms just to satisfy the Lord's desire, the devotee's desires. And I was hearing the class of Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj the other day, and he was saying that, isn't this amazing that Krishna took the form of a boar, of a fish? What is a fish? Practically, it's an ordinary creature, fish. A boar, you know, just the nose. I mean, in Vrindavan, they're really active boars. And the nose, and you know, just go deep, and you know, they're just, this whole nose is constantly twitching. But, you know, for that activity, Krishna took a form of a boar just because he had to do that activity to please his devotees. Krishna takes the form of Varahadev. And that's why it is not some time pass happening when Jayadeva Goswami, a great Goswami, writes the Dash Avatar Stotram, glorifying the 10 main incarnations of the Lord, because it glorifies Krishna, because he is taking all these forms just to please his devotees. Meena Sharira, Shukara Rupa, Kurma Rupa, Rama Sharira, Haladar Rupa, Buddha Sharira, Jai Jagadish Hare. So that Jagadish, the Adish of all Jagat, the supreme control of the whole creation, he is taking the form based on the devotee's desire. So Indra finds this so amazing. And the Brijabasis wanted to see him as a beautiful boy. And so he was a beautiful boy for them. The darling of Mother Yashoda. The paramour of Srimati Radharani. And he was that personified for Kamsa. He takes this form just to please his devotees. Isn't it a wonderful aspect of Krishna's personality that how much effort he takes to please his devotees? That is one very special aspect. If we have faith, if we have understanding that yes, Krishna is such an amazing God that he is ready to do anything to help us to remember him. That will be a great sustenance for our own spiritual life. That conviction that what a personality Krishna is. So while we're reading Bhagavatam, it should constantly nourish our faith in Krishna. We should be constantly checking, is my faith in Krishna really, really increasing? And that faith will not increase till time we properly, mentally, intellectually, and spiritually understand the glory of Krishna. Many a times it is simply a mental understanding. We really don't go deep. But how glorious is Krishna? When Indra is making a prayer, try to understand, he's a disciple of Brihaspati, the guru of all the demigods making the prayer. It is not just, you know, whatever came out, he spoke. And he was in utmost desperation. Please understand, what was the desperation of Indra? He had really messed up right now. And in that messed up situation, he had practically zero ego. I mean, not practically, zero ego. And what is coming out is prayers out of intense desperation for Krishna to please him so that he forgives him. So these prayers are intense prayers of desperation from the Lord, for the Lord. Just as much as Draupadi prayed to Krishna, as much as Gajendra prayed to Krishna, same are the prayers of Indra. So it is a very, very special aspect of Krishna's personality, of how he takes different forms. And similarly, he takes the form of the holy name just to be accessible to every single living entity in the world. Just imagine if Krishna was not his holy name, that Krishna was Bhinna. Bhinna than his holy name. How many people could worship the deities? If Krishna was only the deity and Bhagavatam, but not the holy name. He could have decided, well, I am everything but the holy name. You can chant my name, but I am not, I am different. Luckily he is, but just imagine if he was not. But just to be accessible to every single person, Krishna said, I do not want any excuses to not remember me. You are a chandala, you are a mlecha, you are anybody. You know, the other day I do these morning walks. And we go to, there's a large garden. And there are all sorts of trees. And there are many, many tulsi plants planted in there. So I was saying that, you know, if Krishna is so kind that in amongst the trees he has planted tulsi, and the power of tulsi, you know, is brahmahatyani. I mean, if you have done brahmahatya, you pradakshina pade pade, you are nullified. So I said, you know, I mean, in a garden in the morning, there are many people who come for their health. There are many, you know, boys and girls doing crazy things, and while they're walking, they do all those crazy things. But they're walking around. And unknowingly, I mean, just see the Krishna's mercy, they're doing pradakshina of tulsi. So one person was walking, it was a heavy, he was really heavy, he was perspiring heavily and he was walking. And I usually walk and I chant. Not necessarily my prescribed rounds, extra rounds, don't worry. So I was chanting and this person came walking. What are you doing? Then I said, you have to slow down, I can't run with you. So he slowed down. I said, what are you doing? I see you every day, you are in this beep beep. Then I was explaining about chanting, I was walking around and I was explaining about chanting. I said, my dear friend, can you? I said, no, this all I can't do all these things. I said, I'm not telling you to do it, but can I tell you to do one thing? He said, while you are walking with me, just repeat what I am saying. I said, okay, that I can do. So while I was walking with him, he said, Vrindaya Tulsi Devaya Priyaya Keshava. So he was saying, Krishna Bhakti Prade Devi Satyavate Namo Nama. So he said that. I said, just write. He said, can you write for me? He said, you just, when you come to the garden, just three times recite this and I said, the magic will happen. And I just realized that how accessible is Krishna. How accessible is Krishna's mercy. Because he is all there for his devotees. And who is his devotees? It's written, desires of his devotees. Who is his devotee? In one sense, everybody. Everybody is his devotee. So Krishna is fulfilling the desires of everybody since time immemorial. And that's the wonderful personality of Krishna. And he is so successful in doing so. So this is a great, great personality that Indra Dev is pointing out of Krishna's personality. And while we're talking about Indra, we talk about this act that he's doing right now, the act of seeking apology. That I am sorry. Now, you know, it is in one sense, you say this sorry is such a useless word. You just do something nasty, I'm sorry. You can't do anything back to that person because he has said sorry. But in one sense, this act of apology is such a deep thing. Especially in cultured society. Society of cultured people. So so we will discuss about some aspect. I was just trying to analyze what apology is. So first is, when should we ask for apology? The $1 million question is, when should I ask for apology? So many times we feel, most of the time we are convinced that we have not done anything wrong. So first of all, to convince ourselves that we have done something wrong to somebody, it's a task. But the best time to ask for apology is to do it the moment you realize you have done something wrong. The moment you have done something wrong, you should ask for apology. And that's exactly what Indra is doing if you analyze it. He realized it. He didn't analyze it. Oh, what should I do now? He said, oh my God, what have I done? And he just immediately got to the job for seeking apology. So the best time to seek apology is to realize, as soon as you realize that you've done a mistake. Many times we feel this is obvious. Obviously this is obvious that you should ask for apology when you realize the mistake. But that's true when somebody has done a mistake towards you. But when you have done a mistake, what do? I was analyzing that you are usually protecting yourself from the shame and you're waiting for the heat to go over. We said that I ask for apology now because let the heat get over, you know, and maybe he will not be so upset. I may not have to ask for apology. So we try to delay the process of seeking apology many times, isn't it? We delay it and we try to postpone it and we even try to avoid it by lying or blaming others. But when we really do is what, that when we say sorry, it's almost certain. The moment we realize that I can't ask for apology, that's the time you should ask for apology. So that's very, very important. That we should not really wait, should not really try to justify, not try to really cover up. And many a times, as we're seeing, many times, you know, many people have this habit of seeking apology for mistakes that they have not done. You know, I'm sorry. They're trying to create a false humility. If you see sometimes, but Prabhuji, I'm sorry, and I'm sorry. But you have not done that mistake. It's important to be honest. And what happens in, if you see this, that by this kind of pseudo-apology, we may ease the awkward situation of conversation, but it creates a form of a wrong crying of a wolf. Sometimes I was analyzing that, you know, we have this story of that one boy shouted, there's a wolf, and there was no wolf. People said, this guy is joking. He did it twice, and this guy, when there was actually a wolf, nobody took him seriously. So many times when we ask for apology, when there is no mistake done, people say, hey, aise poochte rehte, every time sorry bolte rehte. When actually he's sorry, arey, I'm really sorry. Hey, to aise bolte rehte. He doesn't really mean it. Are you getting it? We have seen many times people simply ask for apology when there is no reason for asking. So this pseudo apology is also wrong. So it's not the right time to always ask for apology. Many times we ask for apology all the time. I'm sorry, Prabhuji. And typically, you know, we show a garb of humility, but inside we are burning. To hell with you, rascal. But Prabhuji, I'm sorry. That's hypocrisy, my dear friends. We are trying to cover up our hypocrisy by pseudo-apology. Very dangerous. It is like it's like a pondraka-like facade that we have. A pondraka was is simply a facade of Krishna. Similarly, we have a facade of humility, apology. But we are actually trying to hide is our disgust. And when we really need it, nobody will take it seriously. The second is, how do we ask for apology? You know, many times we say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Huh? Is that all? There's no substance inside, simply, take it, sorry. I mean, we see on the roads. And first of all, I mean, I was just so convinced it's so difficult to ask for apology. Somebody has banged in your car, and there's a huge dent in your car, and he knows he has done it. He comes out, kya hai? Just see how apology is so much gone from the society, because this humility is gone. When he comes, this guy has banged your car or done something really wrong. It is his mistake 100%. He comes out. And he says, kya kar lega? What will you do? He has no humility at all. Forget saying sorry. Even in a very superficial way. But even that is so difficult. Please understand, it is so very difficult to ask sorry. I was so convinced, and when I could appreciate this, because when I saw Indra doing it, it's just so glorious. Because for us, it is just so difficult to say sorry in this world. You know, so sometimes you tell a boy, a young boy or a young child, you go and tell sorry. No! Tell sorry! No! I don't want to tell sorry. I'll do anything but not tell sorry. This is Duryodhan syndrome. Duryodhan was like that. I've been seeing Mahabharata, so I'm just affected by Duryodhan. he had this mentality. He was just so obstinate and so stubborn. Say, I will do anything but not say sorry to anybody. Because it's just so much humiliating to say, sorry, my dear friend, I'm sorry. That's not in our culture. You might say, please. It is easier to say, please. I was analyzing that there might be a culture of saying, please do this. Because, you know, you're not so much humble by when you say, please. But when you say, sorry, that means you accept your mistake, you are fallen, and you're saying sorry to that person. Very difficult. So how do you say sorry? First of all, the first aspect, the first component of apology is full acknowledgement of the offense. That's, you see, it's scientific. The way Indra is doing, I was just trying to analyze the whole process, and you can see it is such a fantastic scientific, spiritually scientific process. It's not some emotions just coming out. It is a proper process that has been followed. Not Indra was following a process, as Braithwaite told, do this, this, this. No, it was his heart. But his heart was following a process. It's a first full acknowledgement of the offenses. That means to accept complete responsibility. Yes, I did it. How many of us can do that? When there is a mistake, to go to the person whom we offended, my dear friend, my dear wife, difficult. My dear husband, I'm sorry, I did it. It was my mistake. It doesn't matter whether you and your person, you're hurt, have the same ethics. Many times we say, you know, we share the same ethics, we have the same relationship. I don't have to really acknowledge that I did it. But it's important to accept responsibility of the mistake. And we from this, we have two brilliant examples in our Shastras. Parikshit Maharaj and Jiva Goswami. These two great powerful acharyas. Parikshit Maharaj, he was cursed. He accepted responsibility. Yes, I did this mistake. I did put a dead snake over the shoulder of Shramik Rishi. He accepted the mistake. Jiva Goswami. Both the people's intentions were not wrong. Please understand, they could have easily justified. That's what we do most of the time. We justify our wrongdoing. Prabhuji, I did this because 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I did this because 3, 4, 6, 7, 8. Different reasons. Jiva Goswami could have justified. Rupa Goswami, my dear uncle, I did this to protect you. I did it to protect your protect your glory. I knew you are most scholarly. This is regarding to the story of, what is it, Vallabh Bhatt? Is that right? Vallabh Bhatt. That he was sent to go. Rupnar. Some Vallabh, I don't know. What is it? Scholar, na? In Vrindavan, Rupa Goswami said, I accept the defeat, and Jiva Goswami debated with him. Rupnarayan. I'm not sure. So anyway, so this scholar came, and Jiva Goswami, he said, how can you be having any pride in Vrindavan? Get out of Vrindavan. So he accepted responsibility. Fine, I was displeased. He went to a crocodile hole on the banks of Jamuna, and he stayed there doing intense tapasya. Parikshit Maharaj accepted complete responsibility, didn't defend, didn't counteract. I done a mistake, I accept responsibility and move forward. The first component of apology is to fully acknowledge our offenses, to take complete responsibility of our offenses. Second is to give a proper explanation. A truthful explanation is the best shot at rebuilding a peaceful relationship. Keep it simple. And while you're giving explanation, please understand, this act of apology is such a blow to Maya, because Maya wants quarrel. Please understand, this age is a quarrel of hypocrisy, and the last thing she wants is people asking for apology and creating relationships. Because apology creates relationships. And she wants quarrel. So she's not going to give, when you're starting to ask for apology, she's not going to allow you, okay, my dear friend, continue asking for apology. She's going to be interfering every second. So while you are explaining, sometimes, this is my personal experience, while we are explaining things, our ego still comes up. Hey, what are you doing? Shh. And then you start explaining, and you say, after all, you know, it was not so much of a mistake. And again, you are not taking complete responsibility of me. You did take the responsibility in the first instance, but while you started to explain it, you again tell, after all, it is not that bad. To be honest, my dear Prabhu, I didn't do it so bad. It was not so bad after all. So when you're explaining, be sure that this whole explanation is simply for building the relationship and not for dissecting the event. The explanation is not just to again dissect, you did this and that's why I did that and that's why you did this. The moment you start dissecting, the whole process of apology is again finished. It will not lead to any positive result. The second thing is, while you're explaining something, you try to explain in such a way that you're not trying to justify of what you're doing. And the main focus of explanation is simply to regenerate the lost relationship because of the offense done. And that's what Indra is doing. Please see this. He's not saying, you know, after all, Krishna, for so many years, they offered the yajna to me. How can I not, you know, how can I accept that you do the yajna and you after all appear in a small child's form? If you showed me your Virat Roop, I would have not done this. He didn't do anything of this sort. He explained and he said, I take complete responsibility, and he explained the whole thing without any justification. And then third is, genuine expression of remorse. The third aspect of apology is genuinity. And how do we show genuine expression of remorse? I said, I am sorry you feel that way. You know, when you are genuine, we can always ask that I really feel sorry. the way you are feeling. There should be some genuinity. Because the moment you speak something from a genuine heart, it is easy to discriminate between genuinity and falsity. Sir, I'm really sorry. I know I've pained you. It's not easy to say that, by the way. Again. That I know how much you are troubled. And because we have caused trouble to people, and we will genuinely express that, yes, I'm aware of it. And part of it is, please tell me what more I can do to please you. So a further way to solve the damage is a question that, what else can I do to please you? Genuinely. That, you know, I've displeased you, but I need to do something more. And that's exactly what Keshav Kashmiri did. I was analyzing. He said, Mahaprabhu, I couldn't understand you. Now please tell me, what should I do? I said, don't tell anybody this. Continue your service. So he asked for, he said, what more can I do? Because I'm feeling so very bad for what I have done. There's another thing. The right, genuine way of asking people that I understand how bad you feel. Please tell me, I'm sorry for it. But just saying sorry is not just enough. Sir, what more I can do? And then, it's very important, that after apologizing, many times we feel that now that I apologized, we feel it is our right to be forgiven. Right? Is it not? I with all my genuinity and all my conviction, I have asked for apology. Now, Prabhuji, you must forgive. But the last part of apology is to release the victim from any expectation of forgiveness. This is what Radhanath Swami says. That you ask for apology, but to release the victim, that means to release the person who asks for apology, that you don't have to necessarily forgive me. You release him. Fine, I have done my bit, but you may forgive me, or you may not forgive me. Because even you have an expectation of getting forgiven, mentally, or maybe in due course, verbally, you might do offense further. They ask for apology, you didn't forgive. What sort of person are you? So the complete process of apology is to release the victim or release the person from the expectation of forgiveness. So no matter how noble you have been, this is what I heard from Radhanath Swami Maharaj. He said, no matter how noble you have been, he will forgive or refuse to forgive on his own terms. That's his right. What a brilliant point. You have done the whole process. Now Krishna, lucky for Indra, he forgave him. Because he said, I don't want to forgive. As you did all the things, you put your crown down, you came, all the snan you gave me and everything, fine, but I don't want to forgive. It's just too gross example. But you know, many times in our relationships, because we have hurt somebody so intensely, it takes a long time to be forgiven. And we expect to be forgiven immediately. That, you know, it's like a mechanical process. You did this and you expect the result. It's not machine. You are dealing with people's hearts. But what you're talking about, apology and relationship building, is all a matter of hearts. It's not some machine that you do this process and this process will be happen after that. So we have to release the victim from the expectation of forgiveness. You may be as noble as you have been, but it is the right of the person to forgive or not. But you carry on with your life. And you don't live under the burden of the offense. You have done your best. But you can't live your life with that burden. Oh my God. And then mess up your life. Express, and the last thing is, you know, express appreciation and gratitude. You know, for that person or for that community or for that personality. That without him, the same thing. Describe what your life would be missing without their trust and their company. Yadi gaur na hoi to kabhi ki hoi to. What would be my life without Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? What will be, you know, I've done offense to you, but believe me, my friend, my life will be nothing without you. And it's a fact. Bhaktidit Maharaj said in the last few days of his life, all we have is each other. Right? That's the statement he made. Ultimately, all that we have is each other. So, I'm sorry it has gone a little beyond time.
So, you know, this is something which is very important, that this aspect of seeking apology is such an important aspect of Vaishnava community, because the fact is, to err is human. We do commit mistakes, we do err in our relationships with people, we do commit mistakes, and that causes strain in the relationships, and ultimately the most important thing in human behavior is relationship management. We could do all sort of time management, stress management, life management, all sorts of management. But if we can't do relationship management, there is practically no spiritual life. So the whole purpose of human behavior is relationship management. And an important aspect of relationship management is apology management. How you manage your apology, how you manage... When you say manage, it's not a mechanical thing, but how you program yourself genuinely to seek apology, and that's exactly what Indra is doing. And all these things requires a genuine, humble heart. And the humble heart will be there to the extent you understand the glory of Krishna. And from Lord Indra, we realize that if Indra, who is so great, is surrendered to Krishna, how great is our dear Lord Krishna. Sri Krishna Chandra Bhagavan ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Sri Govardhan Lila ki, Tai Govard Premanandi. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.